أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطاهرين. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله and welcome to a new session of our course from Ali عليه السلام to Al-Mahdi عليه السلام. This is again the second part of the course, the second section of the course, the Mahdi digging out the facts. So, in the previous session, we established the idea that the Mahdi is the 12th amongst the in the progeny of the Prophet of Islam. And we also established that he was already born. He's the son of Imam Hassan Askari. And naturally today, since we know that this was the last Imam and every time has an Imam, that means that today the Imam is still living and he is what we call in Ghaiba. And we established that the Imam was in Ghaiba and that the Prophet and the other Imams had already told us about this idea that the 12th Imam will go into Ghaiba for a very long time. Now, we are living in a time of Ghaiba right now, where we have an Imam, the Imam of our time, okay, he's here, he's living, but we cannot see him. We cannot directly interact with him, at least in the apparent way. Now, the question that comes is, why would Imam go into Ghaiba? What is the wisdom that has led to Imam going into Ghaiba? And this is a really, really important question. It's a question that intrigues everybody's minds. And this is why we have Sheikh Kazim today. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikhana.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Thank you very much again for being with us. So, a very important question, okay? Why did Imam go into Ghaiba? What's the wisdom behind it? Or what are the wisdoms behind this reality?
Okay, so, A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala muhammadin wa alihi tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala muhammad wa ali muhammad.
So, Ghaiba. And the question of what led to this phenomenon that we remember as Ghaiba occultation, as you mentioned, is a very, very important topic because we are in the period of Ghaiba. And that's what defines our role, our responsibility. So understanding the causes behind this thing and knowing that what it means, even before speaking about what am I supposed to do in Ghaiba, is very, very important. So answers to these questions that you just mentioned and getting a accurate picture of what happened and what's happening and what's going to happen. So all of this is linked. Yeah. So the time of the hudur of the imams were present amongst the people. Then you have the period of Ghaiba where the imam is in occultation. We don't have access to him. And then later we have the idea of dhuhur, that reappearance of the imam. Back, yeah. So putting this chain of events in perspective, that what do they mean and what's the wisdom behind, is a fundamental matter for all of us as Muslims and as Shia. So I think this is going to be a very key and important discussion, and this is going to lay the foundations for all the discussions that are going to come later, because they will this discussion today and in 1 or 2 days will define the duties that will be spoken about later. Yeah. So there are many ways to approach it. I'm going to take one of these approaches to answer this question. And that is, we want to understand Ghaiba by understanding Imama in a bit more depth. So I'm going to take back the question to the question of Imamat itself. So far, all the sessions that were here in this course, they're amazing sessions, a lot of information and a lot of details are given out about this idea of Imama and who the Imams are, who individually, who these people are, what are their characteristics, what are their roles. I think we need to take one step further. Okay, so now let's take this Imama and see that in the real world and at the
how
time...
How did it unfold itself,
How did this idea of Imama unfolded itself? So... And that is going to take us to this idea of Ghaiba. Mm. And what's interesting here is that there's a lot of things going on and happen when Imama comes into action, at play, in real life, in society. And there's a lot that the Holy Quran and the narrations have spoken about. So one of our main sources, because this idea of using the right sources and right tools for answering questions is important, right? That's what we have been emphasizing throughout, that these are our sources. So the major sources that we're going to use for this discussion in order to understand in a very general sense, how divine guidance and divine leaders function when they enter the society and when they're amongst the people. Mm. And there are a lot of principles and things that happen there.
Okay. How is this going to link itself to this concept of ghaiba? If you can just quickly give us like a spoiler, yeah, so that we can then know where this is going.
Yeah, I think this is a good point you mentioned, because it's going to take a bit of time for us to see where I'm taking the discussion. Right, yeah. So let me say this here. So what I'm trying to say, if I summarize the whole session, I would say here right now in the beginning, is that imama is a two-way relationship between the imam and the people. And this relationship means that both sides have duties and rights. Mm. Okay. And if one of the sides is not going to fulfill his or their responsibility, then how things are going to act out are going to be very different. So on one side, you have these imams appointed by Allah trying to do their duty of guidance. But for them to perform their duty of guidance, there's some duties that the people and the ummah and the Muslims need to perform.
Okay, what duties towards the
imam? Towards the imam, and we'll go into the details. Yeah. And when it came to these 12 imams, or the 11 imams, these duties were not performed as was expected from the people for a variety of reasons that we'll discuss, and that led to
ghaib. Okay, so Sheikh just summarized the whole discussion. That does not mean that you stop the video here and you just go away like, okay, I understood the point. No, I think there's a lot of details and you need to build this discussion to come to this conclusion. Yeah. And maybe the conclusion will make even more sense once you've built it. So
we haven't even started. So I'll start here. So let me begin my first brief discussion that I want to have, is that this idea of divine guidance is a two-way relationship. On one side, you have Allah, who's the true guide, who's the true wali. And it was discussed in the previous sessions that he sends guides and awliya, his people who have the authority to give out this guidance to the people. So these awliya are sometimes reflected as the prophets, the awsiya of the prophets, and when it comes to the Islam, the Holy Prophet of Islam and the Imam. So these are the divine guides.
Yeah.
So the duty that is assigned to these divine guides very clearly is to guide people, to take them out from darkness into light. So the famous verse of Ayatul Kursi, that Allah waliyul ladina amanu yukhrijuhum min adh-dhulumati ila an-nur. So Allah is the wali. Of course, Rasulullah is also wali, but he's not a wali independent of Allah.
Yeah.
In fact, he's a wali on behalf of Allah.
Yeah.
And then his duty, which in fact is Allah's duty that is being performed, is to lead people from darkness into light. So this idea and a strong connection between wilaya and guidance is something that we can note in different verses of the Quran. So there's another verse in the Quran which says, فَرِيقًا هَدَى وَفَرِيقًا حَقَّ عَلَيْهِمُ الظَّلَالَ إِنَّهُمُ اتَّخَذُوا الشَّيْطَانَ أَوْلِيَاءَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ. So in this verse, clearly the idea of guidance and misguidance is linked to the idea of wilaya.
And alhamdulillah, Sheikh Miqdad had very nicely opened up this concept of wilaya in a previous session that we had.
Yeah, so if we refer back to that session, we would say that the crux of wilaya is that guidance that these awliya and these divine leaders want to.
Yeah, so that leader who through whom the wilaya between the mu'minin happens is also that guide that takes the whole community towards that purpose.
Yeah. So automatically what happens here is that now this guide has come to the people. His duty is to give out that guidance and tell the people the ways to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But on the other hand, people also have certain duties with respect to this divine guide. What is that duty? Okay, now here we are going into, slowly we start to go into details. The most basic duty that we all have with respect to these divine guides is the duty of obedience to them. So the verses of the Quran, أَطِيعُوا اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُوا الرَّسُولَ وَأُولِي الْأَمْرِ مِنْكُمْ. So example, this one of the verses, that our duty with respect to Allah, who's our true wali, and then Rasulullah and the ulil amr, is being defined very clearly in this idea of being obedient to them. So, and again, this idea of this mutual rights between the Ahlul Bayt and the people is so common in our narrations that you'll find many, many places where this is talked about. I'm not going to read all of it. I just want to point. For example, there's a very beautiful narration that talks about what is the right of a wali over ra'iya, so a political leader over people. So this idea was discussed that one of the roles that the imams had was their being the socio-political leader. So that was one of the roles and the responsibilities they had. And this requires that people perform certain duties with respect to this wali so that he can do his leadership. He can perform that thing that is there. So I'll just read one line from here. So it says, وَأَعْظَمُ مَفْتَرَدَ سُبْحَانَهُ مِنْ تِلْكَ الْحُقُوقِ حَقُّ الْوَالِ عَلَى الرَّأِيَ. So this is a narration from Amir al-Mu'mineen. He's describing that there are mutual hukuk between people, different people, groups of people. Then he says, the most important of these rights that are there between the people is the right of a political leader on the people. Mm. So this idea that imams being the political leaders, they had a lot of right on the people, which
again,
means
here when we say political leader, again we don't mean the taghut, we don't mean somebody who's taken power other than in the way that Allah is pleased with.
Yes, exactly. So here we're talking about the divinely appointed or divinely sanctioned political leader. So, and of course, he even says وَحَقُّ الرَّأِيَّةِ عَلَى الْوَالِ. It's a two-sided affair. Even there are some rights that the people hold that the person governing the people and leading the people has to fulfill. And the narration goes and explains that why this is important. Okay, so I'm not going to do that. I just wanted to bring this idea that it's a two-way relations. Okay, now what happens is that this is where slowly, slowly we want to come and see that what actually happened with the imam. So I'm going to say it like this, that from Allah's side, through the sending of the imams, the guidance was complete. Okay. Why do we say that? Intellectually, because Allah is the most powerful, He's the most wise, and He wants to guide the people. So intellectually, it's necessary for Him to send the guides. Yeah. In a manner that people should not be able to come on the Day of Judgment and say that, I didn't have a guide. You didn't send a guide for me. So from Allah's side, the guidance is always sent intellectually. When you look at the Holy Quran, it reinforces this idea that Allah sends these divine guides. Why? Because He wants to complete His hujjah on the people. He wants to leave no excuse and no room for people to have an excuse in terms of their guidance. So look at this verse, Surah An-Nisa, verse number 165. Rusulan mubashirina wa mundirin. Allah has sent these prophets as givers of glad tidings and as warners. So that's the duties. Why? لِأَلَّا يَكُونَ لِلنَّاسِ عَلَى اللَّهِ حُجَّةٌ بَعْدَ الرُّسُلِ. So that people do not have an upper hand over Allah, that we did not get the guidance. You were supposed to send guides for us. We did not have access to full guidance. It was from your side and you didn't send. So we have an excuse in front of you. So he's saying that no, the hujjah from Allah's side is always complete. And then the verse ends, وَكَانَ اللَّهُ عَزِيزًا حَكِيمًا. So these attributes that come at the end of the verses
explain that
these two attributes are relevant here.
Yeah.
So on one side, Allah is Aziz, means He has the power and the izzat and that domination to be able to send these guides. And He's also wise, His wisdom requires this. When it comes to the context of Islam, the verses which were discussed in the previous session clearly tell us that Al-Yawm أَكْمَلْتُ لَكُمْ دِينَكُمْ. So with the announcement of wilaya, the religion is complete. Okay, we know that religion is complete. The point I'm trying to make here is that what does it mean that religion is complete? It means that from Allah's side, He sent His guidance.
Hmm.
So no one can question that Allah left something undone, which was required for the guidance of the people. So أَتْمَمْتُ عَلَيْكُمْ نِعْمَتِي وَرَضِيتُ لَكُمُ الْإِسْلَامَ دِينًا. So we come to this idea that based on Allah's attributes intellectually, based on the verses of the Quran, and based on many, many narrations we have, that Allah always completes His hujjah on the people, that He does not leave any room for excuse for them to have.
Okay. And so, that's why I guess when we said earlier that in many hadiths we see that there is always a hujjah on the earth, one of the reasons is this, that from Allah's side there has to be a hujjah.
Yeah, so exactly. So I wanted to even mention a few narrations. So there's this section in Usulul Kafi where Marhum Kulaini puts the title of the section as أَنَّ الْحُجَّةَ لَا تَقُومُ لِلَّهِ عَلَىٰ خَلْقِهِ إِلَّا بِإِمَامٍ. So it's through the existence of the Imam that the Hujjah is complete on the people. So there are four narrations in this section, all of which are saying that there must be a Hujjah. Allah has to have a Hujjah, and Hujjah means that that person and that Imam who completes, who does not leave any excuse for the people. So people can't say that, oh, this wasn't sent from Allah's side. Okay, so there are four narrations. One of them is Sahih al-Sanad. I mean, who are interested can go and check the Sanad. I'm just going to read one of the riwayats. So it says...
So the other three that are not Sahih, their content is...
So the content is the same. One. So I'll read one of them. So it says, إِنَّ الْحُجَّةَ لَا تَقُومُ لِلَّهِ عَلَىٰ خَلْقِهِ إِلَّا بِإِمَامٍ حَتَّى يُعْرَفْ. So Allah sends an Imam in a manner that he can be known. And people, there are ways for people to recognize it through many different things that were discussed, right? So sometimes it, like for Hujjah, like Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, it would be through the miracles because he's the first one to come. For Amirul Mumneen, it would be through the ahadith of the Holy Prophet and the Holy Quran. For the Hujjaj and the Imams after that. So Allah will place ways for people to know. Of course, the people also have to take effort to go and know. So, for example, those are watching this course, this is an effort from our side to know this. So when we say that Allah keeps this guidance accessible to us, it doesn't mean that it's going to come to my doorstep. No, I have to do a bit of my part, but it's generally accessible. So that's that, how much is required from Allah's side.
Yeah. And the thing that pushes me to go and look for this is that Allah has instilled a certain amount of guidance in my fitrah and in my aql that pushes me, that starts this journey of seeking the truth. And along the path, Allah will guide me according to what I need.
And this is the beautiful point where the inner guide, which is the intellect and the fitrah, and the outer guide, which are the prophets and the imams, they meet. So my inner guide and my inner urge to get closer to Allah, and my intellect, which tells me that I don't know everything that I need to get closer to Allah, all of this push me to go looking out for guidance. That who are these guides? Who's going to tell me what I need? And I go, I look for that guidance, and Allah has made it accessible. And through making, by sending these imams and making their ma'rifat accessible to us, He's completed His hujjah upon us. So there are many, many narrations. I'm saying many, many because I want to say that with so many narrations talking about one theme, you reach certainty, yaqeen, that this was said by the imams and this is what Allah has sent as a guidance. So there's many. أَنَّ الْأَرْضَ لَا تَخْلُ مِنْ حُجَّةِ. These were discussed in the previous section. Then, أَنَّهُ لَوْ لَمْ يَبْكَى فِي الْأَرْضِ إِلَّا رَجُلَانِ لَكَانَ أَحَدُهُمَ الْحُجَّةِ. So there's a section in Usulul Kafi where he collects narrations which say that if there were only two people left on the face of this earth, one of them would be the Imam. So showing this idea that...
That even hujjah, for one person, Allah will make sure there's a hujjah.
Because Allah's attributes require that to happen. He's the guide. He's the wise creator. So even if there are two people, it doesn't matter. He would make one the hujjah. And for the hujjah himself, the guide is directly Allah, right? Yes. Because he's getting the divine guidance. For the other people, is through this hujjah, through this imam. Or this, أَنَّهُ لَوْ لَمْ يَبْكَى فِي الْأَرْضِ إِلَّا رَجُلَانِ. So this was one section. There's another section, Usulul Kafi. So you can say, so this is volume one of Usulul Kafi. There's a whole section, Kitabul Hujjah, and there are beautiful narrations that he brings here, which are many in number. I don't want to go into all the narrations. What I'm trying to say is that from Allah's side, the guidance is complete, perfect. And in context of Islam, this guidance was sent by announcement of Amirul Mumneen being the wali after Rasulullah and the other imams. Okay. Now, this does not mean that after the announcement is made, the guidance will actually in real life come into place and actualize. It doesn't mean that.
What does that mean?
Okay. So
what do you mean by that? What,
so the guidance is sent from Allah, but to accept the guidance or to reject it is in the hands of the people.
Hmm.
So if I want to draw it into steps, step number one is Allah sends his guidance. He appoints wali. He sends imam. Okay. Does the story end here? No, this is the beginning of the story. Why? Because the end of the story, the end of this whole journey is that Allah wants maximum global guidance.
Hmm.
Okay. So it starts with the sending of these guides. That's step number one. But Allah is not happy.
In the ideal situation, the output is a just system established throughout the earth at the hands of the wali of Allah.
The wali of Allah. Such that everyone has that...
that full access.
To
guidance. The grounds are ready for it. The tarbiyah is being done.
And this is also established based on intellectual arguments. That when Allah has these attributes, He can give out His mercy. So this was discussed in the section on Imam in the light of intellect. And also the verses of the Quran. I'll come to the verses of the Quran. That they clearly promise that a time will come where you'll have this maximum global guidance.
Mm.
Okay, so I'll come to that point. So now what happens is that how do you reach from step one, which is just the announcement and making clear from Allah's side that these are the divine guides, to that final conclusion where you're looking at a global, ideal, divine society.
Mm.
Okay. So now, this is not an easy journey. That's what I meant when I said in the beginning of the session that what you have learned so far before this session is theory. Theory in the sense that we establish facts about Imam.
Yeah.
But when these facts and realities want to span out and come out in society and real life and across history, things are going to be very, very complicated. It's not that God announces that these are my divine guides. Everyone says, Alhamdulillah, amazing. We accept the guidance. And very quickly, the ideal society is formed. It's not necessarily guaranteed that this would happen.
Hmm.
Of course, the otherwise is also not guaranteed that this won't happen. What's the deciding factor? It's people's choice to obey or disobey.
Hmm.
So
people's choice to sort of accept that guidance or not, let the guide do his job or
do
not.
His job. Yeah. So I'm going to even divide that into phases, but let's just read the verses of the Quran. So Surah Al-Ma'idah, verse number 92. Wa ati'u Allah wa ati'u Rasul. Wahdharu. So this is interesting. Obey Allah and obey His Prophet and be careful. Okay. Then fa in tawallaytum, but if you turn back, and if you don't accept this guidance, فَعْلَمُوا أَنَّمَا عَلَىٰ رَسُولِنَا الْبَلَاغُ الْمُبِينَ. So Quran is making it clear that when the divine guide is sent, you're supposed to obey him in everything he says, but this obedience is not forced upon you. No one is going to force people to obey. They have to, as you mentioned, through their intellect, through their fitrah, realize that I need to obey him. There's no compulsive force from Allah's side. Why? It's very clear. It's against His wisdom. He created us with free will so that through our free will, we reach perfection. So He's not going to come and force people to accept guidance. That's not going to happen. So I'll mention another verse of the Holy Quran, the same one which I referred before. It's part of the khutbah of Bibi Fatima Salamullah alayha, her last khutbah.
Mm-hmm.
So we briefly spoke about that.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
Yeah. So in her last khutbah, after trying everything to defend the wilay of Amirul Mumineen, and she saw that it didn't work out, so her last khutbah is to the women of Ansar. In that she recites part of this verse. So I'm going to read the full verse. It's Suratul Hud, verse number 28. It's in the context of Prophet Nuh. Okay, so he says, قَالَ يَا كَوْمِ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِن كُنْتُ عَلَىٰ بَيِّنَةٍ مِّن رَبِّي وَآتَانِي رَحْمَةً مِّنْ إِنْدِهِ. That, do you not see that I have clear proofs from my Lord that I am the Prophet, you're supposed to follow me. And He's given me mercy. You see that I'm a person who's got that guidance, who's got that perfections, that mercy of Allah, because mercy of Allah is perfections. This is, فَأُمِّيَتَ عَلَيْكُمْ. It's as if you've gone blind. You don't seem to understand or accept the guidance. And then this part. أَنُلْزِمُكُمُوهَا وَأَنْتُمْ لَهَا كَارِهُونَ. Am I going to force it upon you? Am I going to force this guidance upon you whilst you don't want it?
And Hazrat Zahra says exactly these words. Just
to the people of Medina, people of that time, who refused to accept the wilayah of Amirul Mu'mineen. She's using this verse to tell everyone that أَنُلْزِمُكُمُوهَا, I mean, can I force you, whilst you have decided to leave Amirul Mu'mineen alone. Okay, so this factor came into picture right after the Holy Prophet. Everything was done. Al-yawm akmaltu lakum dinakum wa atmamtu alaykum ni'mati. Everything was put in place by Allah and His Prophet. Allah, through His Prophet, put that complete hujjah on the people. Holy Prophet did not leave anything omitted that was needed for the guidance of the people. But first step, people have to accept it. And you see that in the case of Amirul Mu'mineen, it didn't happen. And you might wonder that, why is it like this? Why? Because it's a test. Mm. And there's no greater test than the test of accepting the wilayah of a divine leader. Probably this is the first hardest step that a person needs to take. Mm. And a lot of the big problems that you have had in history are here, that God sent the guides, forget about obeying them, they're outrightly denied that position. So this idea of takdhib of the rusul, so the Quran mentions that, kadhabu, so they rejected the prophets that we sent. Or when it comes in the context of Islam, it's very clearly mentioned in the narrations that this wilayah of Amirul Mu'mineen was a test for the people. So let me read this. This is from Nahjul Balagha. So it's khutbah number 156. It's part of the khutbah. وَقَامَ إِلَيْهِ رَجُلٌ فَقَالَ يَا أَمِيرَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ أَخْبِرْنَا أَنِ الْفِتْنَةِ. So a person stands from the crowd and says that, O Amirul Mu'mineen, tell us about fitna. وَهَلْ سَأَلْتَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ عَنْهَا. And did you ask Rasulullah about fitna? Okay, now this is interesting. فَقَالَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ. So Amirul Mu'mineen saying, إِنَّهُ لَمَّا أَنزَلَ اللَّهُ سُبْحَانَهُ قَوْلَهُ. When this verse was revealed, أَحَسِبَ النَّاسُ أَن يُتْرَكُوا أَن يَكُولُوا آمَنَّا وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ. Do people think that they will claim and they would say that they believe through their tongues, وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ, and they would not be tested? So Amirul Mu'mineen says, أَلِمْتُ أَنَّ الْفِتْنَةَ لَا تَنْزِلُ بِنَا وَرَسُولُ اللَّهِ بَيْنَ أَذْهُرِنَا. So Amirul Mu'mineen says, I knew that as long as Rasulullah is within us, there's no fitna and a test that's going to come for the ummah. Because he's there. Everyone accepted his authority as a divine.
It was the start of the movement. If they joined the movement, they naturally joined
so
him.
So this Muslim society and ummah was formed on this idea of centrality of the personality of Rasulullah in all aspects. He's the explainer of the religion. He's the bringer of the way. He's the he's doing tarbiyah of the people. He's the socio-political leader. In the Muslim ummah, it was established. So there was no question of fitna. So Amirul Mu'mineen says, I knew that this fitna is not going to happen when he's within us. فَقُلْتُ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ مَا هَذِهِ الْفِتْنَةُ الَّتِي أَخْبَرَكَ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى. So what is this fitna that Allah is informing you about through this verse? فَقَالَ يَا أَلِيُّ إِنَّ أُمَّتِي سَيُفْتَنُونَ بَعْدِي. He said, my ummah, Muslims, would be tested right after I leave this world. So we ask this question, what happened after the Prophet left? What was that question in which the people were shaken?
The biggest thing that stands out is this matter
is this idea of wilayah. And we knew it was a sensitive matter in all its aspects that it's recorded in history. Anyhow, so let me come back to my discussion. So what I'm saying is that Allah sends the guides. From His side, everything is complete. But on the other side, people have free will. And this free will is also a requirement of divine wisdom. One. I'll bring another principle in here, and that is that Allah does not implement guidance through supernatural and miraculous means. This is another thing that we have very clearly in the verses of the Quran, and even intellectually you can establish that the purpose behind guidance is that people accept it themselves by their own choice. doesn't make sense that Allah just comes and says, who? Through a supernatural act or an action or an event, he just makes guidance implemented in the society. Everyone is guided.
Yeah. There were times when supernatural means or things that are like miracles or karamat were used either to finalize the hujjah or when there was a wisdom behind it. For example, to strengthen somebody, there was like a good enough reason for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So but it wasn't like the default principle way of doing it.
So exactly. I think you put it in the right words that the default principle is to take the guidance through regular means. I'm saying quote unquote regular means, and is not going to bring extraordinary means to implement his guidance. And again, I don't want to take a lot of the time, but many verses of the Quran point to this. So I'll say Surah Ash-Shu'ara, verse 3-5. So it's very interesting. So the verse starts, لَعَلَّكَ بَاخِعُ نَفْسَكَ أَلَّا يَكُونُ مُؤْمِنِينَ. So he's speaking to the Prophet and saying that you're so upset and sad that you might just end up harming yourself. Why? Because these people are not believing. Because there was a stage where the people wouldn't believe as much as he would try.
Yeah.
Then this is the verse I'm saying. The Quran says, "Inna sha'nu nazzil alayhim min as-sama'i ayatan fadhallat a'naquhum laha khadin." If we wanted, we would have sent such a sign from the skies, everyone would submit. But, I mean, "Inna sha' means if we would have willed, but we're not going to do that. My wisdom, Allah is saying, my wisdom does not allow that I force guidance upon people and I bring it through irregular means. So, for example, send such a big, like, for example, show people the hellfire very close to all the people. Say that if you don't accept guidance, you're going there.
But then still Allah did use some extraordinary means. For example, in the Battle of Badr, Malaika came and helped them, right? So there was a certain use of extraordinary means, exactly. But not to the point where it contradicts the free will of people and it forces guidance
on
them.
So
even after in front of Prophet Musa, he literally split the sea in half. But even after that, the people had the choice to reject, and many of them did reject it.
So these irregular means has other reasons for which Allah can bring them. So to help the believers, he can use irregular means.
Mm.
But when it comes to the general guidance of everybody, he's not going to use irregular means. Why? Because intellectually it doesn't make sense, because guidance is people follow themselves, and we have verses.
And we have verses to show that he won't do that.
I don't know if we have time right now, we should continue.
We can continue for a few more minutes,
Okay, so from here, my topic becomes much more detailed now. So what I'm going to say is that, or I'm going to put it like in form of a question. So how then is guidance going to be implemented in the regular sense? Because Allah is not going to use any irregular means. So what I'm going to say that it's implemented in two stages. So stage one was announcement of divine guides and Allah making hujjah clear on the people. Okay, so that's step one. And it doesn't stop here. Step two, and this is very important, is that imams and the divine guards are allowed to occupy the position they deserve in the society by the people. This is a very key thing. That just the announcement doesn't make any difference. So Rasulullah announced Amirul Mu'mineen to be the divine guide and the political leader after him. Okay, does that make the guidance come in the society? No. He has to occupy that position.
In fact, if we go behind a step even before Amirul Mu'mineen, we said that Allah sent the Quran, right? If somebody doesn't come and open the Quran and use it, and use it in the way it's supposed to bring me guidance, then it's not going to guide me. Now, when we look at Amirul Mu'mineen in terms of he's a human being, he's not a book, right? So how do you get that guidance from him is by giving him the opportunity to guide you, right? So one is to go to him and ask him a question personally, right? There are different ways of getting that guidance. Now, the full guidance of Amirul Mu'mineen would be by him taking that position in society so that he can have that effect across.
Yeah, so I'll complete that by saying that all the roles that were defined for the imams in the previous sessions, now the people and the society has to give that role to the imams.
Mm.
So, explainer of the religion, in society, if anyone has question, everyone should say, he's the explainer. We should all go to him.
People should accept him as the guide and then be able to ask him those questions.
Yeah. So,
and in fact, I would go this far that it's practically not possible for every single person to go to the imam directly.
So there has it will need a system.
It will need a system where the imam himself is implementing a system that allows everybody to get guidance from him in those indirect ways through means like, for example, ulama.
So that needs to be established. So that's that's one of the stages that needs to happen. And the third stage, so stage one is announcement. Stage two is they're occupying these positions. Third is that now people also have to help him in maximizing guidance. So it's not in. So, for example, it's not enough that people come and tell Amirul Mu'mineen, perfect, Rasulullah appointed you as the divine guide. We accept. We have no problem with that. You become the leader. You become the khalif of the Muslims. And that's it. Khudafis, we are leaving. He said, no, wait. A third set of duties that we as people and Muslims as Ummah had comes into place, and that is that you have to help him now.
Yeah, naturally, so, you can't have a leader and then nobody helping the leader to implement the system.
And Allah is not going to use irregular means. It's not the case, for example, like Amirul Mu'mineen becomes the leader, now angels are going to function and run his government. No, there's people going to run his government. And who are the people? It's amongst the bigger Ummah. So
For the system to work, you need to have those just and knowledgeable people to occupy the important positions.
Exactly.
If you have fasiq people to occupy those
positions. But if it doesn't have enough people to implement Allah's guidance, it's not going to be implemented, or there's going to be a delay. And this delay and these problems, when they reach a certain stage, are going to lead us to ghaib.
Mm.
So you can see it's all happening now.
Yeah.
So if I summarize my discussion so far, I'll say that imamah and divine guidance has two sides to it. One is Allah's side and the side of the imams. Allah is going to send the guides. These guides are going to be those distinguished individuals who are ready to perform that duty and take that heavy task. It's not an easy task. Sometimes we think that, the imams, this is so good for them. They'll get wahi and they just have to tell people. No, imamah is such a heavy responsibility that I'm sure no one would like to even think about like taking it up. So, but they're ready for it. So from their side, everything was complete. But for this guidance to actualize, there are three duties that the people and the ummah needs to perform. One is the ma'rifah of the imam, to recognize who's the true imam. Second, give him that position in the scheme of things, society, wherever. Third, when he's placed in that position where now he can give out that guidance, we need to help him. So these are the three duties that have to be performed by the people. And I tried to support my claim with many verses of the Quran and the hadith that it's a two-way relationship. So I think what we'll do in the second part of our discussion to try and keep it systematic is that were these three duties performed by the people or not in with respect to these 12 individuals, with respect to these 11 individuals. So, and that will lead us, answer to this question would lead us
to why ghaiba had to happen.
So it's a very natural progression of ideas where we are putting these ideas together. And I can guarantee you, when all these things you have put together, you say that ghaiba makes perfect sense. That was the best choice, the most wise choice from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's side to now take away the hujjah, take away the imam into this phase stage called ghaiba. And we'll briefly talk about it, what it means for the imam to be in ghaiba. Is he there? Is he not there? If he's alive, where is he? We have some indications about it in our narrations, because that's our source, right?
Yeah.
I have no direct information about the imam when he's in ghaiba. So my only source is to find out that what does ghaiba actually mean from his side, from the side of the imam. A bit of insight we'll get from some of the narrations that we'll have. So we'll go into
that. So it's perfect time to take a short break. So inshallah, we'll continue this very interesting discussion after a few minutes of just taking a bit of rest. So we'll be back in a moment, inshallah.
Courses, articles, short posts, and inspirational videos. You'll find all your Islamic educational needs in one place.
And that's here. At Babu Rida's online learning platform, we aim to provide all our Muslim brothers and sisters with the necessary knowledge of Islam to satisfy their intellectual thirst. Let's make a quick tour of the platform so you can be familiar with the content and how to access it. So firstly, you have the courses. If you just click here, you'll come to the courses page where you can see all of the courses we have so far. We have divided Islamic subjects into 6 general categories, and some courses which combine a few topics are featured under the general category. You can filter the courses according to their categories. Just click on any course of interest and you can enroll to the course and start immediately. To access any course though, you have to have registered on the website. Don't worry, it's free and it's quick. Each course has a few lessons and some MCQs just to help you make sure you've caught the important points. Some courses need prerequisites because they rely on information learned from other courses. This feature is to help structure your learning and building your knowledge on strong foundations. You can also take notes by clicking on the small icon over here, and you can view all your notes over here. Basically, this is a full study platform which we've adapted to making online learning be more constructive and appealing. Most courses are self-paced, so you can do them in your own time, pause when necessary, and re-listen to parts where you feel the need to. There are many more courses coming, so always keep an eye out on the website and on social media. We'll keep you posted. And then we have a series of articles over here. Some articles, because of the depth of the content, have explanatory videos which make the difficult parts easier to grasp. Other articles also come with an audio format, so you can listen to them in your car or when you're just out and about. All this was strong learning material, but we also have lighter content, which serve as reminders, inspirations, and motivations. That's the blogs and short video sections, which cover a wide range of topics and sometimes related to different occasions of the year. Just go through these two lists and also check out the playlists on our YouTube channel. If you face any issues or have any suggestions, simply contact us and we'll get back to you. So here you go, this is Babu Rida's online learning platform. Happy learning!
Haladdin, illa al-hub, hub Ali, yo all Ali, sayem sayem she, miran bedom all Ali, sayem sayem she, miran bedom all Ali, nur Ali, tuye vojud shi'e moj mizane. راه علی راه تموم خونواده منه حب علی نشونه ی حلال زاده بودنه با حب علی فقط ایمان میخوره محب من والا علی نجا من آدا علی حلق من والا علی نجا من آدا علی حلق من والا علی نجا من هادا علی حلق مولانا علی علی مولانا علی Haladdin, illa al-hub. Haladdin, illa al-wuqs. Haladdin, illa al-wuqs. Bughzeb dushman Ali. Ta akharin nafas migam che qibleye man Ali. Ta akharin nafas migam che qibleye من علی تموم افتخارم که میلو به قدیرم دین علا دین علی برا علی میمیرم فقط علی فقط علی فقط علی امیرم فقط علی فقط علی فقط علی امیرم مولا رازق جهان کل عالم فدا من والا علی نجا من آدا علی حلق من والا علی نجا من آدا علی حلق من والا علی نجا من آدا علی مولانا علی علی
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome back to the session. We're with Sheikh Kadhim discussing the topic of ghaiba and why actually did Imam Mahdi go into ghaiba? What is the wisdom behind it? Now, Sheikh started the session by explaining to us that when it comes to Allah's guidance from His side, He's always completed the guidance. The hujjah is complete from His side. But there's also another side of the story, and that is that we people who are supposed to be guided, we also have duties towards the guidance of Allah. And if we accept that guidance, then actually it bears fruits. But if we don't perform our duties towards it, then actually that guidance doesn't bear fruit and we are not guided.
So I'll just add one more point here, is that maybe certain individuals at their individual level who were present at that time, probably they got their guidance. So for example, they realized that Amirul Mumnin is a guide. Individually, for example, they went to his house and asked for the guidance they needed. And for that amount of guidance, they received what they needed to receive. But the question is that, was Amirul Mumnin sent to guide
a few people
or a few people, a few hundred people, or no? When it comes to the idea of guidance that we know that the Holy Prophet had in mind, he set up a government in Medina. He was writing letters to kings of Persia and Habash and Rome with the idea of spreading guidance. And based on the verses of the Quran, he is sent for all mankind. So it's a global, universal guidance. So his wasi, who's supposed to continue his mission, his guidance also has a very massive scale. It has a global scale. So for that global scale of guidance to come into practice, it doesn't just make sense that you say that Allah has sent it and has announced it and that's it. You don't need any duties to be performed from the side of the people. So definitely there are duties that have to be performed.
And you understand that at the individual level as well. So Unan al-Basri, when he did not appreciate, like you said, one of the conditions, ma'rifah, to recognize the Imam, when he did not accept the Imam as that guide from Allah, but he took him like any other scholar, Imam said, you can, like, he tried to spark that understanding in Unan al-Basri that, look, the source of knowledge is here. When Unan al-Basri accepted that and submitted to it, cut himself off from any other people and went straight to the source of guidance that Allah has appointed, then Imam was able to do tarbiyat for him, right? So even that ability for Imam to do tarbiyat of the people relies on the people to accept that they should be done tarbiyat in the hands of the Imams.
Exactly.
So even at the individual level, there is a two-way relationship.
Yeah. And what happens even in the individual level, and we'll see that, is that if they're not given that social position that they deserve and that Allah has given them, then many, many individuals won't even get an opportunity to get that ma'rifah of Imam as the Imam. So even the individual guidance is compromised if those other duties are not performed by the people. So let me continue my discussion. So I'll make it very organized and say that, okay, so what needs to happen? So the question is that, so now Allah has announced the guidance, He's made the ma'rifah of these Imams accessible to the people, and now people have certain duties. And I define these duties in two levels. One, the first duty is to give them that position that they deserve in the society. One. Second, once they've gotten and received that position, to be with them, to be their helpers in implementing this guidance. So what I'm going to claim and try and establish in the remainder of the portion is that when it came to these, the Imams from the Ahlul Bayt, even this step whereby they would be given the position Allah had given them, the position they deserve to hold in the society, this even did not happen. And except for very short intervals, so for example, those few years of Khilaf of Amirul Mumineen, with all those problems and three wars and that social political turmoil, and maybe a very, very short period that Imam Al-Hasan got, they never got that maximum position that they needed to implement the guidance. So the maximum bar we raise is their socio-political role. Yeah.
Okay, I guess the most at the difficult time of Imam Baqir and Imam Sadiq, they had the opportunity to spread the message as well though.
Yeah, so we have to segregate the duties. So imams had different duties. One was explaining the religion. That takes its own trajectory in terms of the imams. So for example, Amirul Mumineen had more opportunity than, for example, Imam Al-Hasan and Imam Al-Hussein. Imam Al-Hussein and Imam Zainul Abidin's times were the, you can say, the darkest.
Imam Hussein had to make a literal impact for that guidance to reach. It wasn't enough to say.
And
to
people
speak
did
about
not
it.
See them as the source of religion, that they should exclusively refer to them. So people would be going to different people asking their questions. And one of the indications of that is that the number of narrations that we have regarding the matters of fiqh and practical ahkam from Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam is very, very few. Yes. So when you look at Imam al-Sadiq, it's few thousand. But when it comes to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, probably hardly they'll reach 100, for example. Like I'm giving the higher number. So this shows that in society, they did not have this position whereby people would go to them every single day to ask for their questions. At the time of Imam al-Sadiq and Imam al-Baqir, it happened, but note this, it did not still happen for the all Muslims. What they managed to do, Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq, is that only for the Shias, they were able to hold this position of being the explainers of the religion.
And I guess a group of Sunni fuqaha, but then it wasn't like a full-scale thing.
So they would be considered as another faqih besides the fuqaha that were there. So the Muslim ummah in general did not accept them as...
So those ulama did not accept them as source of religion. They just accepted him as a teacher of fiqh.
He's a very distinguished scholar. He's from the progeny of the Holy Prophet. And there are other fuqahas. And a clear indication of that is this hadith Unwan Basri you mentioned. That so let me read this part from Unwan al-Basri. So he says that كنت أختلف إلى مالك ابن أنس سنين فلما قدم جعفر الصادق عليه السلام المدينة اختلفت إليه. So he's in Medina and he's referring to Malik ibn Anas for years for his spiritual guidance. And then when he saw that, oh, Imam Sadiq, he was a distinguished personality respected by all Muslims. When he saw that he's come to Medina, he wanted to go and benefit from his
as well.
Yeah. And that's where the thing you mentioned happened, right? That Imam initially kind of pushes him away, saying that, and it's, he says that, and he says, وَأَحْبَبْتُ أَنْ أَخُدَ أَنْهُ كَمَا أَخَذْتُ أَنْ مَالِكُ. So he said that I wanted to benefit from him also, the way I was benefiting from Malik. فَقَالَ لِي يَوْمًا إِنِّي رَجُلٌ مَطْلُوبٌ. He said that the government is after me. وَمَا أَذَلِكَ لِي أَوْرَادٌ فِي كُلِّ سَاعَةٍ. I'm busy, I have so many zikrs to recite, to have. I'm a busy person. Then he says that, فَلَا تَشْغِلْنِي أَنْ وِرْدِي. Don't like disturb me. I am a busy man. I have a lot of things to do. وَخُدْ أَنْ مَالِكُ. So Ayatollah Tahriri very beautifully explains in his Sharh of Unwan Basri that Imam is the guide. He's not going to push away people when he wants that guidance. But when someone comes to take guidance from the Imam, he has to come with the right mindset, with the right approach, by understanding the position of the person he's referring to.
And it's Imam here imam. Helped him to spark this understanding, right?
And the story,
so
you know,
it's not like, it's not like, okay, we have to understand the Imam. If we don't, the Imam will turn us away. No, the first step Imam will do is to make us realize his position and then give us the
and
more
that's knowledge. What happens with Unwan al-Basri. Yes. I think for Unwan, it was clear that, I mean, in our words, I'll say that Imam is avoiding him.
Yeah.
There's something he doesn't want me to come. Yeah, and then the story follows that he becomes sad. He goes and prays in Masjid al-Nabi and prays to Allah to make Imam Sadiq's heart soft for him, and the thing follows. Yeah. Anyhow, we come back to a discussion. So what I would say is that there were three things required for the Imams to take hold of that position that they wanted in the society in all different aspects. And I was speaking about this, that their different roles. So one of their roles was explaining the religion. That had a different trajectory. So we explained that for some imams, it was very low. No one would refer to them. No one would go to them. Imam Zainul Abidin resorted to du'as to give out that those divine teachings because no one would come to him for political reasons and for this very idea that no one recognized them as the divine guides, that ma'rifah was lost.
Very interesting that in any situation the imam is in, he won't stop his duty. He will perform his duty in the way that the situation allows him to.
Yeah. So that's... In terms of their socio-political role, we know how the things progress. So Amirul Mumneen got Khilafah for a few years, then Imam al-Hassan for a very short period, and then it never came back to the Imam. So each of the duties will separate in terms of did they get that position? But generally we can say that what was supposed to happen did not happen. Why? Because it required three things. I'm going to very briefly mention that what are those reasons that allow the imam to take charge of the society in its full meaning. One is imam needs helpers. Even to reach that position, he needs someone to support him and help him. Second, he needs public acceptance, that people and the ummah as a whole have to accept their role as the imams and as the guides. So that's second. And third, and a very important thing, that the oppressors who might come and try and take away these roles will have to be stopped. So if you combine these three, then you can ensure that now the imam would be in charge and would take charge of the society. And then the third step would follow, that now would start implementing the guidance and building that ideal society. So none of these three things happened for the imams of the Ahlul Bayt. So I'm also going to bring verses of the Quran trying to support these three things, that not only the imams, all divine leaders, they need helpers. So this is a verse, Surah As-Saff, verse number 14. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu kunu ansar Allah. O you who believe, be helpers of Allah. Kama kala Isa ibn Maryam lil hawariyin man ansari ilallah. So it quotes Isa ibn Maryam. So he's saying that who's my helper in the path towards Allah. So see, ansari. So this is an important, that Isa ibn Maryam is a prophet. He's waliullah. He needs helpers. And it's saying ansari. So ansarullah are ansaru Isa. It's one and the same thing. Because the verse begins by saying, kunu ansar Allah.
Because that obedience to the Prophet is the obedience to Allah. So helping Prophet is helping Allah.
Exactly, helping. So, and again, this is in the context of the other verse from Surah Al-Imran, which says, فَلَمَّا أَحَسَّ إِيسَ مِنْهُمُ الْكُفْرِ قَالَ مَنْ أَنْصَارِ إِلَى اللَّهِ. So when Prophet Isa saw that the kufr is spreading in the society, misguidance is spreading, he sensed that, he asked for helpers. So the same thing holds true and held true for the imams. They needed helpers who would help them to reach that position, to establish themselves as the political leaders and the other roles that they had. So that's one. And we have a lot of reference to this in the ahadith, that this did not happen for the imams. They did not have enough helpers to help them to reach that position.
So those are hadiths where imam is saying that if I had this many supporters, I could have done something.
And repeats for the different imams. So the famous one is from Imam Sadiq, that one of the companions asked, because it's a time of transition from Banu Umayyah to Banu Abbas, a companion comes and says that, why don't you rise? And like, it's your haq, it's the haq of the Ahlul Bayt. So he tells him that, come with me. He takes him outside Medina, and there's a herd of sheep, and Imam tells him that, count. So he counts. I don't remember the number. It was 17 or 18 now. I don't remember. And Imam says that, if I had these many helpers, I would rise. Okay. Now, someone might say that there were so many helpers, people ready to... Now, what Imam means is, Ansar, this being at the level of helpers of Waliullah, has requirements.
It's not just saying,
it's my claiming that I love him, even I obey him. So when you ask the scholars, they say our relationship with the imams and divine leaders is defined in these three levels. The first level is you love them. Second level is you obey them. The third level is you're ready to now help them. It's not a level that is easy. So why? Because the duty that has to be performed is heavy. It's so Imam heavy. Is asking that I did not have ansar that I needed to get to that position where I can even start implementing that very broad guidance. Yeah. So,
I mean,
localized guidance, individual guidance was happening. People would come and speak to him. But that wasn't the aim, to guide a few people. Imam wanted that very general and global guidance. And for that to happen, first condition, the Holy Quran and the narrations, and we have this repeating so many times in our ziyarat, wa nusrati lakum mu'adda. So when you refer to the imams, we have been taught to keep saying that my help is ready for you. My help is ready for you. Question, why are imams telling everyone at that time to recite this in ziyarat? Why? Because it's not ready. So you see the dilemma. It's like Imam is saying, I don't have helpers. So I'm going to tell everyone to recite in their ziyarat that, I mean, I need to do something about it. So it's an instruction to all the Shias,
that attention to us,
to that this look, idea of we Nusrat, need to of helping learn, the Imam.
We need to, our aim should be to try and help the Imam. And I guess the Imam's movement is such that it's like a storm. You need people who can hold on strongly. It's not just a matter of, I obey Imam, I do my basic, you know, wajibat and stuff, and that's enough. Yes, that's important, that's crucial. Yeah, that's, but we're talking about standing there and not just, you know, taking over a small city. Allah wants the guidance to go all over the Islamic Empire and beyond. You need very strong people for that.
So, although I'll just complete this point by saying one thing, that this doesn't mean that they had no helpers. I'm not trying to say that.
Yeah.
I'm saying that they did not have enough helpers to put them in that position that they deserved. And they needed to implement the guidance. They had helpers. And if it would not be for these Ansarul A'imma, the helpers of the different imams, even this religion that we have today wouldn't reach us. So I'm not trying to make it black and white. So I'm saying that they were,
Ansar were not enough for that
level of guidance level of to guidance, materialize.
But there was enough to do at
to
least this
protect
much.
The core of the religion so that it reaches us today. And how do we know that? Very clearly, you go to the people who were with Imam al-Hussein in Karbala. We refer to them as Assalamu alaikum ya Ansar adinillah. So this word Ansar comes there, that whole ziyarat of the Shuhada'i Karbala. So that's there. Then there's a very, very interesting narration. Sheikh Sadus narrates this. I'm not going to read all of it, but it's really beautiful. If I had time, I would read. So this is from Imam Musa ibn Ja'far, Imam al-Qadhim. He lists the Hawariyun of Rasulullah and all the Imams. So Hawariyun, go back to the verse I mentioned, that the Holy Prophet Isa says that Kala lil Hawariyin. So let me read it. Kama Kala Isa ibn Maryam lil Hawariyin. So he said to the Hawariyun, Man Ansari ilallah? Kala al Hawariyun, Nahnu Ansarullah. So the Hawariyun of Isa were the Ansar. Now in this narration it starts like this, that إِذَا كَانَ يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ نَادَى مُنَادٍ أَيْنَ حَوَارِيُّ مُحَمَّدِ بْنِ عَبْدُ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمَ. On the day of judgment, a caller will call out, where are the Hawariyun of Rasulullah? Who are they? أَلَّذِينَ لَمْ يَنْكُذُوا الْأَهْدَى وَمَدَوْا عَلَيْهِ. Who never broke that allegiance that they had with the Prophet. And one of the allegiances that we have with the divine leaders is the allegiance of Nusra, of helping them. Anyhow, so it's the lame. For Yaqumu Salman wa Miqdad wa Abu Dhar. Then it continues. So I'll just read one of the Imams. It's very beautiful. So, for example, I'll read for you here. Yeah. So I'll read for you. Wa Hawariyu Ja'far ibn Muhammad. So who are those Hawariyun of Imam al-Sadiq? So there are a few names here that have come in other narrations also. So Abdullah ibn Shariq al-Amiri, Zurarat ibn Ayan, Zurara, his name has come. Buraid ibn Muawiyah al-Ijli, Muhammad ibn Muslim al-Thakafi, Laith ibn al-Bakhtari al-Muradi. These are big narrators. Abdullah ibn Abi Yafur. So these are those close companions who are protecting Imam Sadiq's ahadith. These are the Ansarullah. So I'm not saying that there were no helpers, but there are not enough helpers for him to reach that position. So this is one condition, that imams need helpers to reach that position to implement guidance. The second thing that's needed is acceptance from public. So we're not saying that all the people, the general masses, will rise to the station of being Ansar. For whatever reason, we can discuss that. But we generally know that from million people, you'll have like 100 or 313, the Ansarul Mahdi, from so many people. But the people also have a duty, and the duty is to acknowledge that position that the Ahlul Bayt have. Don't deny that. And this has been a problem throughout the history when it came to the Prophet. So Prophet Ibrahim, Surah Al-Ankabut, verse number 24, فَمَا كَانَ جَوَابَ قَوْمِهِ إِلَّا أَنْ كَالُوا اُقْتُلُوهُ أَوْ حَرِّكُوهُ. So when Prophet Ibrahim came with guidance, his qawm, now the qawm means general people, masses, their response was, kill him and burn him. So it's like, we don't recognize you, we don't accept you, we don't want you.
In fact, if I can use the example of Harun, where the people had actually believed in him, and yet they did not want to accept him yet.
Yeah.
Right, so he again could not perform that guidance, and then they completely went astray.
Yeah. So this acceptance from people is important. We can't just ignore it. Why? Because if people are not going to accept it, how is this Waliullah going to implement the guidance? Let's say he has Ansar. He has all those amazing people who are ready and saying that, okay, let's go and just do it. Let's implement the guidance. Who you want to guide? People. You go to the people, they said, who are you? I don't accept you.
And
I
guess see you as the imam. This is what we would call the correct meaning of democracy, right? Islamic democracy.
Yeah. So I wouldn't, because we can use the term democracy, but if as long as we don't mean the regular meaning. Mm. So I would say that this is the Islamic meaning of people's role and people's participation in politics, in the political authority. So Islam sees some role for people in political activity. It doesn't say that, yes, the political leaders are divinely appointed, no doubt. But this divine leader needs that acceptability.
Of the people, yeah.
And Allah puts a lot of emphasis on there that people should come and give this acceptance. Mm. And unfortunately, this did not happen for the imam. So Ziyarat Ashura and the other Ziyarat we have, I'm reading. So I brought one verse of the Quran, Prophet Ibrahim. Let's bring it in the context of the imams. What happened? وَلَّعَنَ اللَّهُ أُمَّةً دَفَأَتْكُمْ أَنْ مَقَامِكُمْ. So this is what happened, right? That something happened that the imams did not get that maqam.
They were pushed away from the position that they deserved.
وَأَزَالَتْكُمْ أَنْ مَرَاتِبِكُمُ الَّتِي رَتَّبَكُمُ اللَّهُ فِيهَا. Allah had assigned a certain station for them, not because that station is important, no, because it's a requirement for the guidance to be implemented. Without that, how are they going to implement the guidance? It won't happen. So this was a problem that you see in history. And I would really urge my audience to look at the history of the imams from this perspective, that look what happened to them. This part of history is really sad, that you have these leaders who have everything needed for humanity to reach its perfection and not go through so much suffering. I mean, humanity has gone through a lot of suffering from that time till today, and it's still suffering. So they had all these things, but they never reached that position that they deserved. And one of the factors was that people did not give that acceptability, and they did not make, I would say, like that room for them to come and take that position. So when this position was lost, the amount of guidance that the imams could give out was severely curtailed, limited. They don't have political power. They're not seen as spiritual guides, the only sole exclusive spiritual guides, like Rasulullah, by the masses.
They're losing out.
We are not, we shouldn't even think that the imam is losing out. No. Waliullah has reached his perfection. It's basically we lose out. So this is a part of history that we should look at this. So if you want to see all of this in one place, everything I've explained, you can see it in Dua Nutba. So right from what happened with the prophets and how, why Allah sent the prophets, and it was for the hujjah to be completed on the people, and then it came to the Holy Prophet and he completed the hujjah on the people, he brought the religion, then he appointed Amirul Mumineen, and it was supposed to continue, but they were denied this position. This is exactly what Dua Nutbah. So Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, and it says Allahumma lakal hamdu ala ma jara bihi qada'uka fi awliya'ik. So it's talking about the awliya, the divine guides. So it describes their qualities and everything. And then it reaches a place where he says that why were these guides sent? Why? Because so that the hujjah is complete on the people. So it says here that mustahfidhan ba'da mustahfidhin min muddatin ila mudda. Allah would set guides after guides who are protectors of the religion. Ikamatan lidinik, so that the religion is established. Wa hujjatan ala ibadik. Wa li'alla yazul al-haqqu an makari, so the haqq is established and the batil doesn't overtake. And so that no one can come and say that, why did you not send Rusul and the guides? And then the story, I mean, those have gone through Dua Nutbah. So it's an important dua that tells us that how this succession of divine leaders has happened. And it's called Dua Nutbah because it also tells us the sad part of history. Not sad just in the sense that they're physically oppressed. That's also very sad. So the event of Karbala, it's very sad, it's very painful, because even the physical wounds that were inflicted, but more than that,
the guidance of Allah was inhibited. Yeah.
The guidance. So when Amirul Mumineen was martyred, what did people hear? Wallahi tahaddamat arkanul huda. That's the main problem, that Amirul Mumineen, it's not his person that's being afflicted. The pillars of guidance are gone. Amirul Mumineen is that pillar of guidance. And then the story continues, and we know that what happened with the Imams. I won't go into it, but it's telling us a sad reality. It might be imagined that, oh, these are very negative things being portrayed in the dua. It's not about the negative or negativity. It's about the reality, what happened with the Imams.
They're denied this position. We need to accept this reality and realize that this is what people have done towards the guides, and therefore we should learn a lesson from that and not do it ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. So we need to be realistic, and sometimes reality and how things happened in the past, we need to realize they're not as Allah would have liked. They're against what Allah would have loved and wanted to happen. And this is the biggest calamity we have, right? That the Imams, they could not get that position that they deserve. So this is the second thing.
This is
thing.
The nature of human free will. Allah wants something, He's not going to impose it. And he's going to leave it on human free will to follow what he wants, or go the other way and suffer for it.
And this shows that announcing guidance and divine guides is one part of the story. But in order to reach that final destination, there's so much happening in between. And we saw that things went wrong. The Imams did not get that position. So this is the second factor. So the first thing, Imam needs helpers. Second thing is he needs public acceptance. The third thing is that the enemies should not come and become an obstacle in the path of the Imams. And we see that that's what happened. For what reasons? I would summarize it, those people who came and denied the Ahlul Bayt their rights. I would summarize why they did what they did is love of the world. Hubbud dunya, with all its offshoots, love of power, Umar ibn Sa'd, Mulkuray, Munyati, is reciting poetry on the night when he's made that offer by Ibn Ziyad. So he says that, I know if I kill Imam al-Hussein,
I'm going to hell,
but Mulkuray Munyati, it's my dream to get the government of Ray, it's love of power. So that brought him down. So these people who came against the Ahlul Bayt, this was the reason, or for whatever reason, but this was a big obstacle in the path of Ahlul Bayt reaching that position. So we have this, and again, the Quran makes several mention to this kind of a thing. People, alladina yasudduna an sabilillah, that always there are people who take people away from divine guidance for their worldly benefit, for their lowly desire. So from the Fir'auns, against the Musa and all those people who oppose the prophets to those people, the kuffar who oppose the holy prophet of Islam, the chain continued. There were people who... So imagine, no helpers, no acceptance, enemies. Imagine the situation, the imams were there. And therefore the guidance couldn't be given out the way Allah had planned or Allah would have ideally wanted it to happen.
And just to remind that when we say that these people come and stop the guidance from reaching the people, again, the people who are not at fault will be judged according to the situation they were in. So we shouldn't forget that this aspect, the side of justice of Allah is there as well. That just because the guidance didn't reach them doesn't mean they'll go to hell straight away.
Definitely.
So if they had nothing to do with this and they were really oppressed themselves, and because of that they were not able to reach that full guidance, they will be judged according to that.
For example, the Quran would call these people the mustadafin. So those people who are weak, for whatever reason, they did not get access to the guidance that they needed, they'll be fine. I mean, so the divine justice is in its own place. So I'll just refer to this one part, and I'm trying to summarize, and I'm very close to my conclusion. So, and conclusion will tell us everything about Ghaiba, that why Ghaiba happened. And not only it will tell everything about Ghaiba, it will also tell us that how then Dhuhur would happen. So this discussion would lead us to all the answers. So I'll just complete this point. So there's this sentence in the Ziyarat of Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam. So it's something, and even personally for me, whenever I would read this, I would think, what is this talking about? So there's a sentence where it reads like this. Allahumma il'anil ladina baddalu ni'matak wattahamu nabiyyak wajahadu ayatik wasakhiru bi imamik wa hamalun nasa ala aktafi ali Muhammad alayhi wasallam. This part. So even this idea of la'an and cursing is there because these people are doing something that's just stopping guidance from reaching people. So what are they doing?
Translate
this. So it's saying that may Allah curse those people who changed Allah's ni'mah. Okay, now what's interesting is that when you look at the narrations that we have under this ayah, so this is also, I mean, my audience and everyone should look into that, many of the verses of the Quran, when you go in hadith, you see that these verses are explained by the Ahlul Bayt. Okay, so let me read one. So this same ayah is there. The explanation for this is there 3 times in Usulul Kafi. So Al-Kafi reports 3 narrations where someone comes and he asks Imam about this verse. So this is part of the verse of the Quran. Alam tara ila alladhina baddalu ni'matallahi kufra wa ahallu kawmahum dar al-bawar. So this is a verse of the Quran. So this ziyarat has a part of that verse. So it's saying, Allahumma la'anil ladina baddalu ni'mat. Question, who changed the ni'mat? What is this ni'mat that was changed? So let me read one of these narrations in Usulul Kafi. It says that, Sa'altu Aba Abdullah alayhi salam an qawlillahi azza wa jal, alam tara ila alladina baddalu ni'mat Allah kufra. Have you not seen those people who changed Allah's blessing into kufr? So they wasted Allah's blessing. Imam says, Kala a'ni biha Quraysh katibatan alladina adu Rasulullah wa nasabu lahu al-harb wa jahadu wasiyata wasiyah. So these are those people. Another narration clearly mentions Banu Umayyah. Says that, who are these people who changed Allah's ni'mat into kufr and misled people? Ahallu qawmahum dar al-bawar. It clearly mentions the name of Banu Umayyah. So even let me read that riwayat also for you. So Imam is saying this. This is from Amirul Mu'minin. Ma balu aqwamin ghayyaru sunnata Rasulullah. What would happen to those people who changed the sunnah of Rasulullah? Wa adalu an wasiyahi, who turned away from his wasi, speaking about himself. La yatakhawafuna an yanzila bihimul adab. They don't fear that azab of Allah will come on them. ثم تلا هذه الآية ألم تر إلى الذين بدلوا نعمة الله كفرا وأحلوا قومهم دار البوار جهنم ثم قال نحن النعمة. So he's saying the Ahlul Bayt are the ni'mah. If you want to complete this, the verse in the Quran, وَلَتُسْأَلُنَّ يَوْمَ إِذٍ عَنِ النَّعِيمِ. So Imam said, ask, what is this na'im that Allah will ask us on the day of judgment? So Imam replies, it's not the food and these regular material blessings that you use. You think Allah is greater than that he'll ask you about these petty things. They said, nahnu na'im. So this idea that, why? Because they're the greatest blessing. They're the source of guidance for all of us. So this ziyarat of Imam al-Ridha, it's cursing those people who changed this ni'mat. وَاتَّهَمُوا نَبِيَكْ. They leveled accusations on the Prophet. جَهَدُوا بِآيَاتِكْ. They went against the verses of Quran. وَسَخِرُوا بِإِمَامِكْ. They ridiculed the imams, and this is وَحَمَلُوا النَّاسَ عَلَىٰ أَكْتَافِ عَلِي مُحَمَّدِ. So what these oppressors did is that they even turned people against the Ahlul Bayt. So not only they oppressed and opposed the Ahlul Bayt, things became worse. They, through whatever means, through propaganda, through the several means they had, the people who are supposed to be with the Imam and help the Imam are now against the Imam. حَمَلُ النَّاسَ عَلَىٰ أَكْتَافِ عَلِي مُحَمَّدِ. So this is a factor in history that we cannot disregard and ignore. So put all of these three together. Okay, so this Imam needs these three things to be established, to implement guidance. None of these three things materialized. So this is one. Two. But Allah wants His guidance to be maximized. He's not ready to say that, okay, people didn't want it. Okay, so finished. Let everyone go. No, we have promises in the Quran which say that this religion is eventually going to prevail over other religions. هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله. One. لقد كتبنا في الزبور من بعد الذكر أن الأرض يرثها عبادي الصالحون. We have promised in Zabur of Prophet Dawood that the time will come that the earth, al-ard, so they say it's mutlak, means the entire world will be inherited, governed and ruled by عبادي الصالحون. Then وَنُرِيدُ أَن نَمُنَّ عَلَى الَّذِينَ اسْتُضْعِفُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَنَجْعَلَهُمْ أَئِمَّةً وَنَجْعَلَهُمُ الْوَارِثُونَ. All these verses. So this verse means that we have willed to give our blessings to those people who are weak in the land and make these weak people, the oppressed people, the leaders of the world. So on one side, imams did not get those three things they needed. On one side, Allah has to fulfill His promise. On the third side, He has 12 imams. So this number 12 is important. Probably won't know the wisdom behind it, but we generally know that Allah is not going to just keep sending imam after imam and is going to be killed and martyred by the oppressors and people are not doing anything. It's against His wisdom. Because someone might come here and say that, oh, why did not Allah just keep sending imam after imam and imam? Doesn't make sense. If the situation of the people hasn't changed, they're not ready to help the imam, they're not ready to give him that position, they're not ready to stop the oppressors from killing the imam, then it has no logical grounding and wisdom to keep sending the imam.
And I guess apart from this, there must also be a wisdom of why Allah chose 12, because this number 12 has a reality. It's come, for example, we had a hadith in one of the previous sessions that said that it's the same numbers as the apostles of one of the previous prophets. So it seems like the number 12
has relevance.
This limited number of imams, okay, let's forget 12. The limited number of imams itself has a hikmah that we probably don't know what it is.
But because we know that there are mutawatir ahadiths from Rasulullah that the imams after me would be 12. So we know for a fact that this is the reality. Wisdom we may not understand. 11 of these, they did not get what they needed to provide that guidance. Okay, question, what happens to the 12th one? So put all this together. What happens to the 12th one is that he has to be there. Okay, why? Because la takhlu al-ard min al-hujjah. That the earth cannot be without the hujjah. So those narrations. So he has to be there. But he cannot be there in a manner that the oppressors shall come and kill him.
Yeah.
Okay. Combine these two things together. This exactly means ghaiba. That's it. So he's there, but not in a regular manner
that he can be killed.
Okay. So from here we come to this a conclusion of our discussion that ghaiba and its happening is a deficiency on the part of the ummah and the people, and not a deficiency on the part of the imam or Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So from their side, everything was put in place. And Allah even sent 11 imams to give people the opportunity to put things in place. Helpers, acceptability, get rid of the oppressors. It did not happen. The 12th one has to be there. Why? Because that final promise needs to be fulfilled. Okay, so that has to. So that link has to be made. Who's going to make that link? It's the final one. It's the final imam, Imam al-Mahdi, ajallallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. And therefore you have this idea called the ghaiba. And this discussion even explains the reasons behind the ghaiba, that the reason are lack of these three things. So these three things. Not enough helpers. There's no thirst and general demand from people that we need a savior. And there are oppressors out there. So bring this in the setting of Imam al-Mahdi. Things become very, very clear that look, as long as we live in times where there are not enough helpers to help the Imam establish that ideal society, one. So you're talking about those 313,
yeah,
those special companions, and also others, because the
helpers are just
the elite, yeah, are the top helpers of the Imam. But that's not enough. If there's no global demand for a savior, if people are happy with the current system, they're saying that, no, we're doing fine. They don't have that thirst that, oh, we need someone to save us. Things are going bad.
If Imam would be here, the same situation would be there. They would take him like any other.
So even if you would have helpers, and these helpers and the Imam would come and say that, come, let me guide you. He said, I don't need you. I'm happy with my life. That inner thirst that we are lacking something, we don't have that guidance, we're not getting closer to Allah at a good big scale is not there. And as long as the oppressors are there and they're committing, then the ghaiba would continue. So I think I don't now have to go through the detailed like reasons for the ghaiba. I think my discussion has summarized this. And let me just say this here, I won't go through it, but these exact same reasons which we worked out using authentic history, the role of the imams, and how it did not work out in real life, these exact same things have been mentioned in the narrations.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just read one of these. And again, this is from, so one of these is from Amir al-Mu'mineen himself, because he's the first one to face this injustice, right? So he's the first one to see that it's not working out. Not from my side, from the side of the ummah. So it's a narration from Amir al-Mu'mineen. He says, اَعْلَمُوا أَنَّ الْأَرْضَ لَا تَخْلُو مِنْ حُجَّةِ اللَّهِ أَزَّوَجَ. Know that earth is never devoid of a hujjat from Allah. وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ سَيُؤْمِي خَلْقَهُ عَنْهَا بِذُلْمِهِمْ. But Allah is going to blind people, and is not going to, people wouldn't be in a state to benefit from him. They would be blinded from the ghaiba. Why? بِذُلْمِهِمْ وَجَوْرِهِمْ وَإِسْرَافِهِمْ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ. Amir al-Mu'mineen, it's recorded in the books of Ahadith that he's saying that the hujjat is there, but will be blinded. So even some of the scholars have said this. It's a very nice way of saying it, that look, Imam is not in ghaiba. We are in ghaiba.
Mm.
So he can see us. We're he knows our state. We are blinded. We don't have access to him. And what's the reason? It's very clear that it's the dhulmihim wa jawrihim wa israfihim ala anfusihim. That when the ummah as a whole decides to leave the imam alone, it's a dhulm. And that will lead to the thing. So what we just worked out is also mentioned in the ahadith very clearly. There's this a reason of the ghaiba.
Yeah.
And then this will also help later when the discussion about the dhuhur and our responsibilities in ghaiba would come. This would set the stage for that discussion.
We also have in ahadith other reasons and wisdoms why Imam went into ghaiba, right? So we have an example where Imam says that by staying, by not being in ghaiba, he will have to pledge allegiance to the oppressors, and he was not supposed to pledge allegiance to the oppressors. And so for that to happen again, he would have to go into hiding, because otherwise, if he doesn't pledge allegiance, they would kill him.
Yeah. So what we worked out so far is, you can say, those very general and clear reasons of why Ghaiba happened. And what it means is that, the minimum it means is that we have no direct access to the Imam. Okay. Now, from his side, how does it work? What does it mean for him to be in Ghaiba? Is he disconnected with the people? He has no idea what's happening to the people. He has no impact in the lives of the people. He has no impact in different events. Are we saying that? No, we're not saying
that. That wouldn't make sense, because that's the whole point of him being the Hujjah, right? Yeah.
So his being Hujjah means a lot. If you take it back to that, the Takwini Wilaya they have, that function completely holds true. Because that Takwini Wilaya, Wilaya Takwiniya that they have, it has nothing to do with these Zahiri aspects and the social aspects.
Yeah.
That's a position.
It's a reality. It's a reality in the world of existence.
So that's definitely, he's the Aina Sababul Muttasilu Bain al Ardi Wasama, in words of Dua Inud, but he's that connection between the realm of Ghaib and Allah and the earth. He is the source through which the divine grace flows. Okay, that's it. So that's there. But even from a very social and real perspective, based on the narrations that we have, we just get a glimpse. So this is a tawqi that Imam al-Hujjah, let me just, it's very interesting. So this is a tawqi, it's recorded in the books of Ahadith, from Imam al-Hujjah to Sheikh Mufid. And that he says that, Inna gayru muhmalina limura'atikum. Don't think that I'm in ghaiba, it means that I've forgotten you, or I have nothing to do with you. I have left taking care of you, looking after you. He's talking to the Shia. Wala nasina lidhikrikum. Don't think I've forgotten you, the Shias. Okay, so the least we know, we're trying to work out an understanding of how is it from the side of the Imam. So that takwini aspect is there, it's a reality, and that's there. But even beyond that, we have this, that no, even at a very regular day-to-day scale, I being a Shia, he hasn't forgotten me. And then he says, وَلَوْلَا ذَلِكْ لَنَزَلَ بِكُمُ اللَّوَى وَاسْتَلَمَكُمُ الْعَدَى. If it wouldn't be for my attention and my taking care of you, the Shia would be just destroyed by the enemy. So again, what this exactly means in real instances of how Imam would be helping in different places, I would even say that we don't know. You can find traces of it, but let's say from perspective of Ahadith, I don't know what how his instances of his making an impact in our lives is. But this Tawqi and the other narrations we have says that he has some level of impact on even our day-to-day regular lives, disregarding the fact that he has that takwini position and that reality that's there. So
that's the idea of Ghaib. He's not in Ghaib. He's in Ghaiba, but he's still active. We are the ones who are blinded from his activity.
And we can't benefit from him fully. So therefore, the narration say that it's like sun behind the cloud. So these are, of course, figurative expressions trying to tell us that, look, when sun is behind the cloud, it's there. The sun is there in its full force.
The sun is still allowing the earth to live, the life on
sustaining
earth.
Sustaining the earth. This example is very many, it has made very many dimensions. We benefit even from that light, but in a diminished manner. Don't have direct access to that.
We don't even realize that where this light is coming from. We don't see the source of the light, we just see its benefits.
So this is, again, would be an important point. So anyhow, we come back. So I'll just complete that question you had asked, that yes, what we worked out so far are the general reasons for Ghaiba. And we know what it means for the Imam to be in Ghaiba and what kind of relationship we would have. And there'll be a discussion about how to form connection with the Imam in the Ghaiba. It's one of the discussions that's coming up. But there are some specific reasons for Ghaiba as well. How do we know? We refer to the narrations. There's nothing exclusive about these few reasons we said. Lack of helpers, lack of public acceptability, and presence of oppressors. So these are main reasons for ghibah. But yes, there are other reasons, as you mentioned. So one of the reasons which is mentioned and which we also worked out is يَخَافُ الْقَتْلِ. I mean, it's mentioned in the narration. So let me read one of those. Yeah, so there's a narration. So there are a few narrations that talk. So إِذَا قَامَ الْقَائِمُ تَلَى هَذِهِ الْآيَةِ فَفَرَرْتُ مِنْكُمْ لَمَّا خِفْتُكُمْ. So basically, this fear that the oppressors would kill him. Of course, this is not a fear.
A personal for, fear for, yeah, for out his of, out life. Of cowardice. It's not that fear.
Yeah. It's a fear. How do we know that? Of course, you put together the qualities of the imam and his role is there, and we know that they love to be martyred in the way of Allah. It's something that they took pride in. So it's a fear that if the 12th hujjah is also, the final hujjah is also going to be killed at the hands of the oppressors, the doors of guidance are closed forever. Yeah. So this khawf for people's guidance.
The risk of me being, of staying alive is that you will kill me. So for that,
I have to. So it's exactly as those expressions about the Holy Prophet in the Quran that say that, فَلَا تَخْشَوْهُمْ, don't fear the people. Yeah, so that same thing about the verse of the wilayah, saying that don't fear the people. He's not fearing people for personal reasons. He's fearing this fact that if people misunderstand and don't take this idea of wilayah properly, they'll get misguided. It's a sensitive issue. So we know that. That explanation is there. But another reason which is mentioned, and you pointed to that, so I'll also read the narration about that, is that although we can even intellectually justify, is that there's this idea that the previous imams, at least in some places and cases, they had to accept some bay'ah from the oppressors. Mm-hmm. They had to, in a way, I don't want to use the word, but like compromise, in the sense that the oppressors would come and force them to do certain things. For example, Imam al-Radda had to accept that being a wali'ul ahd for Ma'mun. So he accepted that. That's
kind obviously of, he used it to his benefit. But
and
then
for the guidance. He used it for the guidance. But that was still some kind of being under an oppressor.
So why would it be that Imam Mahdi shouldn't do that?
So one reason we know is because it's mentioned in the narrations. Okay, but if we want to think about it a bit more and try and justify, I would say that he's the final hujjah from Allah, and he's come to give that maximum ideal guidance. And because the mission he has is so high, so great, that Allah doesn't want to leave even a slight deficiency and lack in that project, in that work. That he's going to come with that authority that no oppressor will have an upper hand on him. So probably it's manifestation of that Allah's great
power,
that full power, he's that full manifestation, that, and that probably requires him to be not under anybody's bay'ah in any sense. So again, I'm not saying that this is the reason. The main proof we have is the narrations, but we can try and imagine that this could be the reason. Anyway, we'll stop here. And so if I were to summarize everything I have said and we have discussed, I would summarize it by quoting Sheikh At-Tusi. When he's talking about this idea of Imam al-Mahdi and Ghaibah, he says, وُجُودُهُ لُطْف. Existence of a divine guide is Allah's grace. It's a favor is done to us. وَتَصَرُّفُهُ لُطْفٌ آخر. And his coming and helping and guiding us and coming forward, he cares for our guidance. So I just recited that Tawqi. Even in the ghaibah, he cares for us. Is lutfun akhar, is a multiplied grace, is another grace and mercy. Of course, Allah's mercy flowing through him. Wa adamuhu minna. That's it. His absence is from us. So the reasons for ghaibah go back to
us.
To us. You can take it at an individual scale, and you can even take it as a something which has a historical, social dimension, which we tried to explain.
Okay, so thank you very much. Really interesting discussion, very well structured, leading to that conclusion. So we mentioned the conclusion in the beginning, and we sort of built on it to come back to that point. So thank you very much, Sheikh Nas. So inshallah, in the next discussions, we'll talk about what is our duty in the ghaibah. Before that, we'll also sort of touch on the idea that, okay, if Imam is in ghaibah, then how is he still performing his duties, and see how we can explore that aspect of the discussion, inshallah. Okay, so until the next sessions where we discuss more about this very interesting topic and develop more on it, see you there, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.